and thank you for joining us for another episode of The Garden Pod. My name is Amy Marsh, and today I'm joined by our sports leaders, Athletics Director Mark Springall and Assistant Athletic Director Rachel Price. Hello, both of you. Could you give us a quick introduction, please?
Hi, I'm Mark Springall. I'm the Athletics Director at GIS. I've been here for 17 years. Working my way up from Head of Secondary PE through to Assistant AD and now Athletics Director.
I'm Rachel Price, I'm the Assistant Athletics Director. I've been at Garden for 5 years and I'm also the Head of Interhouse in the primary school.
Yeah, and you've recorded with me before, Rachel, where we talked about the house system, but today we are very much talking about sport. So would one of you like to start by just telling us a little bit about why do we have sports programs in schools? What are they for? What's the purpose of them?
Obviously, sports, healthy living is an important part. I mean, after all, if we're talking about children, what is more important than a child's health?
Yeah.
Sport obviously gives access to that alongside the skills of teamwork, learning to deal with winning and losing. The list is almost endless. Obviously, for us, a large part of the programme is the representative side and enjoying and getting into a competitive environment, both within the school and outside of school. Students get the opportunity to travel overseas and develop the skills of being independent from parents. Again, working as a team, those life skills that we all look for.
Yeah, and I think lots of people have good memories of being part of those programs because it develops a whole sense of being part of a team and lots of other wider kind of social and emotional skills.
Yeah. And also building on those relationships, because when you are part of a team, the only way you are successful is if you are working together. And that's working together with people, whether or not they are your best friends,
yeah,
or whether it's somebody that you don't click with, but having to find that mutual ground of what you are aiming to and wanting to go to and building it in there.
Yeah.
And like Mark said, along with the health part, because when we want people to leave school, we want them to find something that they want to continue in for the rest of their lives. Mm. And it doesn't matter what that is, but we just want them to be physically active so then they can pass that down and we can hopefully break this culture which is coming in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree. I recently had a really good quote, which I mentioned before, which is the purpose of education is to help people find passions. And so this is one of many things we provide, which might be a passion for individual students. And of course, let's not forget the healthy living, the importance of being physically active for a long, healthy life. We want children to leave us and flourish. And that's obviously health as well as academics. Well, you've already talked about the kind of knowledge and skills that students develop through sport, but we do have PE lessons. So why do we have kind of additional programmes on top of PE lessons, or in general, this is all schools, not just us?
I think part of it is giving students the opportunity to develop, like you mentioned, that passion. PE lessons will take students to a certain level, give them a certain amount of knowledge. Within our extracurricular sporting programmes, they then have the opportunity to develop further. They can go on to representative levels, both for the school and for some of our students, they move further into a national programme as well. So it really is an opportunity for them to develop further beyond what the classroom can provide.
Yeah. And particularly here within the classroom, they only have 6 lessons on a sport. So
yeah,
if you think of it from a skills level, there's only so much you can develop within those 6 lessons. So within PE, you're looking more at links and things which can transfer, looking more on the side of managing emotions, leadership, all those soft skills as well, while our sports programme will be more on the physical side and the health side.
Mm. They're almost sort of different purposes, aren't they? PE is giving you that inclusive, everybody's taking part, developing all these skills. This is a way to really specialise and to get to a really high level in a particular sport rather than developing broader skills. Do you want to talk a little bit then about the sports programme that we have at GIS and why it's structured in the way that it is?
So the sports programme is structured predominantly by age group. We have representative teams that run from under 9 age group through under 11, under 13, under 15, and then to our under 18. Also, other schools will know them as varsity level sports. That's our highest performing sports. We are members of three key organisations, AIMS, which is the Malaysian International Schools Conglomerate, FABISIA, which is the British Schools in Southeast or in Asia, as it's now titled, and SAESAC, which is a bigger group again in terms of a broader spectrum of schools, not just British. Our sports programme is structured around predominantly the competitions that those groups offer. However, we do run a number of sports also that aren't necessarily competitive within those groups. In terms of the logistical organisation within the school, for many of our teams, we run a seasonal approach in that a team will be in season during their competition time,
yeah,
and will have a fixed number of training sessions per week to prepare them for competition. Outside of that time, teams may be on a pre- or post-season training program. We do have some programs like swimming that runs all year round because their competitions don't just fall in a specific time, whereas something like basketball, they will fall at a specific time where there is a clear season to be played.
Mm-hmm. And why, apart from the seasonal approach, are there any other reasons why it's structured in the way it is? It's very much linked to those three organisations and their calendars, is that right?
Yeah, so we base our programme, as in our competitive sports, around those external competitions that we take part in,
yeah,
so that the students have had enough preparation time so that they can perform at their best.
Yeah.
And so like you do in all sports programmes, you work up to that main event, which for AIMS, CSAC and FABISIA are all tournaments.
Yeah.
And then we put those friendly games in to build them up, prepare, they look at the tactical side. Also just learning to cope, because you learn the most through failing. So they have those opportunities to fail, to pick themselves up, learn how it is to dig deep.
Yeah.
So then hopefully you get that flourish when,
yeah,
it comes to the tournaments.
Yeah. So it sounds a lot like your setting makes a really big difference, because schools in the UK will have a different structure based on the other schools in the area or the organisations they're part of. And so wherever you are in the world and whatever your kind of school group is, it will very much be dependent on that.
It's very much, yeah, driven on what your context,
yeah,
is in terms of, for us, there's obviously a facility challenge as well. So there's a logistical jigsaw puzzle to,
yeah,
put everything together.
How many courts do you have?
How many fields do you have?
How many pools?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, and like Rachel's alluded to, you know, the timing of certain sports and competitions, you know, drives how we do schedule. We talk now, as we're talking, our under 13 FABISIA team are on a plane to,
mm-hmm,
Bangkok.
Yeah.
You know, they have just spent the last 8-9 weeks preparing for that. Prior to that, our under 15 team went in late November, so that meant that they were training before, from August to November.
Mm.
Yeah, but we also take on that seasonal approach so that it also allows us to engage other members within the community, because if we didn't take the seasonal approach, as Mark was talking about, because we are dictated by facilities,
yeah,
we wouldn't be able to offer opportunities to other students. So we have that competitive and excellence which happens seasonal, which then allows us to have space opened up,
mm,
to then where we can grow grassroots.
Yeah.
So then people still have the opportunity to come in, build on, and just do things which they love and enjoy, because,
yeah,
we don't want to kill anybody's love for something.
No, and also you might have students joining in, say, year 8 who might potentially be very good in a sport, but they haven't necessarily had those opportunities in a previous school, and so ways of opening out to allow other people to do some sport and build up that kind of love. It does lead on well to then the question, how do you balance that kind of sporting excellence with allowing a lot of participation and people to find their passions and to try different things? It's probably very hard.
It's not an easy one. Again, as we sort of mentioned, our facilities, you know, the logistics there. What we try to do is we try to squeeze as many students into every session that we possibly can.
Yeah.
So we try to, you know, we obviously have a physical cap in terms of numbers. There's only so many people you can have on a football field or in a swimming pool at any one time. And more often than not, the majority of our sessions, we are at capacity. We
yeah.
do try to take as many students as we can. That means that we have to provide the coaches to cope with that as well. Where we do have gaps in the calendar or in the timetable, we do try to schedule things that are a little bit more recreational. We did introduce a number of years ago a 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. training session to alleviate some of the pressure on our facilities to give us the opportunity to offer those recreational sports. We do occasionally offer a 4:30 to 5:30 slot for teams, again, to try to free up space to allow other students access to sporting abilities.
Yeah, it's something I've really noticed at this school, especially compared to the UK, where the building will be locked at a particular time. You know, the janitor opens it in the morning and it's locked at like 6 o'clock. There are people on our site every morning at 6 a.m. They're in the pool, they're on the field, the floodlights are on in the sports hall. I left school about 7:15 last night, and there were children in the canteen waiting for the lightning alarm to go off, and it was pouring with rain here. And you see people coming on site at 5 o'clock to go and play badminton. So you, and at the weekend as well, there are people on site all weekend,
yeah,
using all of the spaces we have available,
yeah,
and just trying to really maximise it, what we can offer.
Yeah, and the way we try to balance it as well is through working very closely with our co-curricular team.
Yes.
And so Mark shares the office with them, and what we're not able to offer in our sports programme, they try and also help fill in those gaps. So
mm-hmm.
then we're reaching further afield as well. And that's where we can take more of those weekends, what you're talking about, and they
yeah.
run them through getting people in and still allowing all those opportunities to students, but also provide things that we as members of staff can't. Like, some of them are coming and doing skateboarding,
yeah.
and they were looking at doing some archery.
Yeah.
We as members of staff don't have those skills, and they're looking at broadening and opening up those things, particularly as things like the Olympics are seeing more alternative
yes.
sports coming into them. So we've got some skateboarding in, there's rock climbing, what happens as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to adapt with what we're seeing on the outside world as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any downsides to the structure that you've just described there, having a seasonal approach? Obviously, we already talked about capacity and those sorts of things, trying to widen it out and having these different groups coming in, or other parts of the sports programme which you think maybe don't work so well, either for us or other schools?
I think one of the biggest issues where we try to avoid this, but there can sometimes be conflict. So if a student is a talented sports person and they're not just playing one sport, which is what we kind of want anyway,
yes.
Certainly in our primary school, sometimes there can be, unfortunately, due to scheduling and just the jigsaw not working, you know, sometimes they can find that they have to make a choice between one sport or another.
Yeah.
And we do as much as we can to avoid that, but that sometimes can happen. And obviously, you know, we are limited, so there's sometimes some students do miss out, and that's a big thing. We are aware of this. We are putting programs, and like Rachel just mentioned, the CCA program, the way we use them to try to provide opportunity
yeah.
for those students who perhaps cannot access, or for whatever reason don't get into a sports team, a representative sports team.
But yeah, we've had big changes here because we've had to take a step back and have a look at what we're doing to provide for a school rather than a small pocket.
Yes.
So that's why very recently we have brought in this seasonal approach, because when we took that deep dive into our system, we realised it was just the same pocket of students
mm.
that we were hitting and looking at. And not just for them in terms of we're missing other people to develop, but we had to also think about their well-being. If they are all year hitting 6-7 sessions every week on top of academics,
yeah,
where do we fall into looking after that child? So then that's where our seasonal approach then started coming in. So then it eases pressures on academics, but then it opens us up to bring in the rest of the school into the system. So we kind of now, we haven't found the perfect model yet. It's our first year of it. Things are changing as they're going, but we're trying to create more of a balance of here's where the excellence goes.
Yeah.
Yes, we know potentially it may not be as high as we want because we can't run you all year round, because then we will have hundreds of students who can't access something.
Yeah.
But this is the model that can work the best for all of our stakeholders, whether that is for members of staff, students, parents. And it's just a real fine balancing act, which we're still trying to get to.
It's certainly,
we're working
certainly a work in progress.
Mm. So what is the, you said it's not the perfect model. What is the perfect model?
I think the perfect model would be, obviously, it's dependent on your context, but the perfect model, if you had almost unlimited resources, is one where any child can access physical activity, sport, at whatever level they feel is appropriate or is appropriate for them. For some, that will be a high level of competition, and for others, it will be a purely recreational activity. And like we've mentioned, it is part of our job, a huge part of our job, is preparing students for life after school and giving them that exposure to something when you know that they go off to university or later on in life where they are physically active.
Yeah,
I know when I meet students, alumni students, one of my first questions is always, what are you playing? What are you still doing in terms of physical activity? And sometimes they say, very sheepishly, I'm not doing anything, and others say, oh, I've still carried on with this, or I gave up on that, but I found this. But it was something that they'd done here that had led them into that pathway. So I think that's the perfect model would be, you know, where all students have access and they were able to continue with some kind of physical activity post leaving us.
Yeah, and for some students that will be at a high competitive level, but for other students, actually, if they've done things in school and they just have the confidence that, yes, they know the rules of cricket or they know enough about different team sports that they can get involved in something and just play with their friends or...
But I think that's the key, and the now what you hit on the head, it's the confidence.
Yeah.
It's giving the students the confidence. Like, we have a gym here so that they can walk into a fitness centre. They know how to use a treadmill. They know how to use the weights. They know what exercises to do with the dumbbells. They feel comfortable and confident enough to approach a sports team, to ask, to walk into a class.
Mm.
And it's instilling that confidence to them to give it a go and just to try and to have a love and understand not just the physical benefits, but the mental benefits of what exercise will give them and for their entire life and how that will go there.
Yeah, because for many people of more my generation, they might have left school with the view that they're not sporty, and that's actually stopped them from being part of any group because they kind of think, if I go in, I won't know what I'm doing, or other people will be a high level. But if you build up the confidence for them to do that, hopefully it just opens doors.
Yeah.
Last question then. This is more of a shift actually towards kind of the parents, or maybe more practical things that people can do. If you have children who engage in sport or want to engage in sport, do you have advice for parents as to kind of what they should be doing with their children at home, or how they should be encouraging them into clubs, kinds of activities and things they're doing, or how they even go about finding opportunities?
I mean, first and foremost, I think the key thing is to give children as much exposure across a variety of different sports as they possibly can.
Yeah, so don't just specialise.
Certainly if children are at the primary level,
we
talk about specialisation normally around about 15 to 16 years old. Up until that point, the jack of all trades, really, give a go at everything, you know, from swimming to athletics to gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
To team sports, invasion, racket sports, give them an opportunity to experience those. In terms of getting into clubs or outside of the school provision, quite often the child's social network will be a good
yes.
way in, and other parents. Certainly within Malaysia, the club scene is very different to what you might find in the UK. Certainly
right.
in the UK, the club scene, and I speak from only my personal experience with football and rugby in terms of having taught students and also having children involved in those sports myself. Certainly I know from my time in the UK, the football and rugby club scenes were very well organised with clear
mm-hmm.
league structures. Within Malaysia, that seems a little bit less prevalent and
yeah.
a little bit harder to find information out. It does often seem to be a question of knowing someone who's
yeah.
already involved. So if I was, as a parent, it's a question of reaching out to your social networks
yeah.
and trying to find out. I mean, if there are any GIS parents listening in and they're not sure, we also can direct
yeah.
in the way. We do have contacts with clubs across a broad spectrum that we can help steer
yeah.
Parents and students into.
And it might be just in a different country, in a different setting, just widen the net and look at different
yeah.
sports.
Yeah.
I think badminton is very well established in Malaysia, maybe a way rugby's not.
Yeah.
And actually your child might be able to find a group and
yeah.
a club somewhere
yeah.
else.
And depending what country you're in, councils play a big part. So like if you were in the UK, you would access a council's website and that would have lists of clubs and different
right.
things.
Yeah.
Here it is very much that word of mouth, going and speaking to different people. I know when I worked in the Middle East, the same thing was there. There were clubs out there, but not so big on the advertising.
Yeah.
It wasn't a central system anywhere. So it would be speaking to the parents of your children's friends, going to speak to the PE teachers in the school who have more knowledge or more fingers in the pie, so to speak, to see what's out there. And just ask the questions, because
yeah.
things will be in every country. It's just finding them.
Yeah.
And then if they're not, why couldn't you set something
yeah.
up? You can organise for your child with a group of their friends to go to a park, to go to an area and play and have fun. It doesn't always have to be structured.
Yeah.
And I think that's been lost. I know particularly over here since COVID, allowing unstructured things,
yeah.
just allow them to go and play with their friends. That's when they learn so much as well.
Yeah. Often you just need a ball or a bat
yeah.
and a ball.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah. And go,
yeah.
let
space.
Them be creative, let
yeah.
it be unstructured
yeah.
and go with it. It doesn't always have to be completely structured. If you've got young children, they don't need to always be in clubs. Get a balloon out, have some
yeah.
fun, get them hitting it up,
yeah.
you know, have a ball with them, encourage them into the pool, play games. Not everything has to be completely structured.
Yeah.
You want them to enjoy it.
Yes.
Because the minute they lose fun, that's when they'll ask not to be there.
Yeah.
So also, just think about the pressures. Why they find it fun, they will be begging for you to take them. The minute
yeah.
it's not fun anymore, that's when you'll possibly see things start to shift.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you both so much. Really interesting speaking to you today. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to mention?
Well, I think it's just such a big, broad topic. You
yeah.
just have to think, as a parent, if you're thinking about it as your children, it's take that bigger step back. What is it you want your child to get from sport?
Yeah.
And listen to them as well. Listen to what they're saying. Listen to how they're coping. But at the same time, if they come to a hurdle and want to go, it's supporting them to learn from those failures.
Yeah.
So it's a real balancing act for parents as well.
Yeah.
For schools, it's not necessarily looking at what is out there and trying to copy it. What do we have? What do our kids like? What
yeah.
can our staff offer? What can work for us?
Mm.
It needs to be bespoke to you. And then keep on looking at it, evaluating it. Where can you make improvements? What has worked? What doesn't? It just can't stay the same.
Yeah.
It needs to be live and active.
I think Rachel's just stolen all of my points there. So, yeah, just I would just echo what Rachel said.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of children, it's about having fun and giving them that experience. For myself, I'm 50 years old, I'm still playing rugby. Why am I still playing rugby at 50 years old? Because I enjoy it.
Yes.
I don't enjoy it the day after a game, but actually, I enjoy the training, I enjoy playing, and ultimately, if my children are still doing some kind of physical activity when they're 50 years old, that will be fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main thing for parents is, you know, like I almost said at the start, what is more important to us as parents than our children's health?
Mm.
But I don't think there is anything, or for me personally, there isn't. In terms of schools, it is all down to your context.
Yeah.
And it's working with your shareholders, your stakeholders, to meet those needs.
Yeah.
And that is on a very, very individual basis.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you both so much.
No worries, thank you.